Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is really one of my favorite people to listen to. I could listen to her for hours. And it's Anne Mahoney, who is she's a handwriting analyst and has been here before to talk about that. Today she is going to talk about something else, although I don't know whether handwriting comes into this at all. We'll see. But I want to read you something that is from a newsletter of hers. By the way, her newsletters and her blogs, it's just all fascinating. She says, "On to Big Love, which rolls along the bumpy road to romance from ecstasy to agony and back again as we witness bold declarations, shy flirtations, and sweet assignations. If ever there was a better vehicle for sending signals than the handkerchief, I've yet to find it." You want to please talk about handkerchiefs and handkerchief heroes?
Well, you know, I'm what I call an accidental collector, and I have carried handkerchiefs since I was a child. My mother carried handkerchiefs. This is something.
Do you still?
I still do.
Yeah.
But it's something from a long ago era, and I didn't realize when I started. I used to give brides their handkerchief, and I would monogram it in pale blue with the date of the wedding. And I've been doing that forever. And I said, you know, you complained he forgot the anniversary, he didn't bring the champagne, he didn't do whatever. And I said, if you want champagne and roses, lay this handkerchief on his pillow. It's got the date on it about a week before. Now, if you're going for a sable, you may as well just pin it to the pillowcase and leave it there for a year. But the point is, you know, you got to help him along there. I mean, he's happy to do that, but remind him of the date. How are they supposed to know? But it is true. There's an entire flirtation language with handkerchiefs that actually started way back when, and there were books on it all through the Victorian era. Queen Elizabeth I even had handkerchief signals that she sent to her help, certain things she wanted or didn't want. But if you were a young lady, you could not approach a man. And so there are, holding it up to the left cheek means something, holding it up to the right. Oh, yes, whether you're available or whether you're taken, whether you lay it on your lap, whether you twist it in your hand. There are signals for go away. There are signals for come closer. There are signals for I'll meet you in the garden.
I had no idea of all this.
Absolutely. Well, and the same thing with fans. There are fan signals. There are handkerchief signals, because that was the only way you could. And when you see the lady dropping her hanky,
that I've heard of.
Trust me, that was planned, and she chose her target. And these were beautiful silk handkerchiefs, monograms, so that he knew who it came from. He knew who it was. He had an opportunity then
to pick it up, and
to run and pick it up. And I have to tell you, it's pretty interesting, because there was an article, gosh, it's been a couple of years ago now, in the New York Times about the death of romance. And these kids today who do everything electronically have no idea how to date. Mm-hmm. And they group date.
Yes.
And the article was, one gal thought she had a date with a guy on Friday night. And at 10:30, he texts her, 10:30 on Friday night, "I'm at the such and such bar with pals. Want to join me?"
And that was his idea of a date?
Yeah, and she didn't, because she said that's like one step below a date. I said that's like 20 steps below a date. And they don't know how to do this anymore.
Courtship is suffering.
There is no courtship.
Well, you know, I think I was a child when I knew this, because I grew up with handkerchiefs also. They were my favorite gifts. You would get a couple of beautiful handkerchiefs from I. Magnin.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, embroidered or just beautiful. I still have all my mother's. Anyway.
Yeah.
So that men would keep a handkerchief under their armpit to absorb their own scent.
Oh.
And then, you know, use that later as a flirtation. I mean, that's so turf marking.
Oh, I had no idea that.
We'll look that up later.
Well, that's interesting. Yes. I know one time I was at a graduation at Stanford, and I had a handkerchief tied to my purse, and it had dogs on it, all pictures of dogs. And I was talking to this grandfather who was there for his granddaughter's graduation, and I was so embarrassed because we were talking about something, and he turned to she told Grandpa, we're going out. She had a date, but they're going as a group. All the girls are going as a group, and they're going to meet the guys. And he's like, can he not even come and pick her up? It's like he said, when I was that age, it's not a matter of they have these huge student loans. He said, I didn't have a car. Right. I didn't have two nickels to rub together. If I gave the girl flowers, I couldn't take her to dinner. If I took her to dinner, I couldn't give her a corsage. But we made the effort and we called ahead because we were saying, your time is valuable. Mm-hmm. You're worth it. But they just go as a group. Then he turns to this whole family that he's with and he said, flirting is dead. And he says, now this lady knows how to flirt. And I thought,
to you?
To me. And I thought, what? I was, you know, and his lovely wife, Margaret Rose, was there giving me dagger eyes. And I thought, I am not flirting with your husband. And he held up the handkerchief.
Oh, my goodness.
And he said, and we've been talking about dogs. And it had a big St. Bernard on it. And he had a St. Bernard as a child that he could never go swimming because the dog would always come
so
to drag him out of
the... So it's a conversation starter.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
Well, you know, I carry handkerchiefs all the time. And every once in a while, one of my daughters doesn't have a Kleenex. So do you have a Kleenex? I say, here, take this. And I give her a handkerchief. And she says, oh, I can't use that.
I know.
I can't blow my... I said, yes, that's what they're for. And then
actually,
we wash them.
Actually, the origin of handkerchiefs is fashion, not utilitarian.
Okay, so when did it switch?
And it started about... Well, handkerchiefs, there are a lot of different people who claim the origin, but it's about 1000 B.C. in China.
Really?
In China. And they were cloths that people put on their head to protect them from the sun. And so... Later, when European traders were going along with Marco Polo and the Silk Route, they brought back these wonderful cloths that people used as fashion accessories. But what happened, if you look at Renaissance paintings, handkerchiefs became a status symbol. In Persia, you could not carry a handkerchief unless you were royalty. And they were embroidered with gold and silver threads and gold and silver lace. They were mentioned in dowries. They were mentioned in wills. They were willed to people. Louis XVI issued a decree that no one could carry a handkerchief larger than his. And he has, in his all his paintings, he's carrying a handkerchief. And however elaborate that handkerchief is, that shows your rank.
Okay, so the kids that don't want to use it for blowing their nose have their eye on something real here.
Oh, yeah. Well, now, if you remember, and I'm trying to remember if it was Queen Victoria or which one it was, because people said, well, what did they use if they didn't use handkerchiefs? Okay, they used their sleeves. And the reason that she had soldiers have all these buttons on their cuffs,
was to prevent their
uniforms, was to keep them from wiping their noses on their sleeves.
I heard that. Yes.
Yeah. And so eventually what happened is, I mean, eventually we started carrying handkerchiefs. These cloths got smaller and smaller, and they were just very utilitarian. In the 20s, they were white. In the 30s, as I had told you before, when the Depression came, women didn't buy a new outfit. For 5 cents to 15 cents, you could buy a handkerchief with violets embroidered on the door. And that's how you changed your outfit for Easter.
Well, do you remember the waitresses in, I don't know if there wasn't a Denny's then, but waitresses in those kind of diners
had handkerchiefs
attached to their upper, like between the breast and the shoulder.
That was a fashion thing,
kind of a boot. And I thought that was gorgeous. And I went around having a handkerchief pinned to my clothing, to the horror of my mother and every relative.
Oh no!
Because it was just so goofy. But I just thought that was gorgeous.
Well, and I'm sorry we don't have pockets anymore in our suits.
Well, they pinned them.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the old movie Good Morning, Miss Dove, every child that came into the classroom had to have a handkerchief pinned. But I have to tell you, from the 1800s, there's an old custom called show and blow. And because of health reasons, hygienic reasons, kids had to come to school and show that they had a clean white handkerchief.
Oh, fresh, yes.
Well, did Mom have time to wash and iron all? So they had one for show and one for blow. So the kid always had in his right pocket a clean white handkerchief he'd show the teacher. And in his left pocket, he had an old blue and white gingham handkerchief that he really used. And Mom was like, you know, once a week, once every two, keep your show clean for the teacher. So, you know, what can they say?
Why don't we segue into something else you showed me from your blog about men and women and what men are looking for and what women are looking for. Yes,
well,
let's do it.
Okay, when we got into good color fast dyes in the 30s and 40s, people started putting lots of images on the handkerchiefs. And of course, romance was one of the big images. Valentine handkerchiefs are the most plentiful, even more so than Christmas handkerchiefs. So Valentine handkerchiefs were a big deal. Well, then in the 50s, some of it you may think it's tongue-in-cheek, but there are a lot of handkerchiefs in this blog about literally handkerchiefs that say, how to catch a husband. And if you go down further in the blog, it's then how to keep a husband.
Oh, so those are actual handkerchiefs.
Oh, those are all handkerchiefs.
Oh, talk about what they advise.
Those are, I have, I'm embarrassed to say, I haven't counted them, but someone estimated I have about 6,000 handkerchiefs.
Oh, you do?
In my collection.
Oh, so you're really serious.
Yeah.
Double about this.
How to catch a husband is all do's and don'ts. Don't whine, don't complain, bring him his slippers in the evening, blah, blah, blah. And then for the men, it's what you should do to catch a girlfriend. And then if all else fails, and it says on the handkerchief, if all else fails, marry her.
Okay, so this is how to get a maid, essentially.
How to get a maid. It's how to get a maid. And
I did hear once somebody say that marriage for a man is a very expensive way to get his laundry done for free.
Well, a lot of guys say, when you say, why did you get married? I said, dating is so much work. Dating is so much work. It was so much easier to get married. Well, dating isn't work for people anymore. But I'll tell you a story about that and about a millennial who a handkerchief changed everything for her. So, yeah. Then the next handkerchief with men, it's like if she makes her own clothes... Okay, we know that's an old handkerchief. If she makes her own clothes, if she's a good cook, if she cleans the house, if she likes all your friends, and on the handkerchief, all the friends he has are women. If he likes all your friends, then keep her. She's a keeper. And they're very tongue-in-cheek. They're very fun because, for one,
they're cartoons.
They are cartoons. Yeah. But what's interesting is there were major textile designers and major cartoonists who were doing these images. These were a big deal. Tammas Keefe is one of the major handkerchief designers, and she had contracts with Lord & Taylor, with Neiman Marcus. There were exclusives.
This is such a day gone by.
It is.
Although, you know, see that same thing, though, now, come to think of it. You see it on Kleenex. They make beautiful Kleenexes in little pouches that are gorgeous.
Well, let me tell you about Kleenex.
And they also make cocktail napkins with these kind of cartoony messages.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So we haven't lost the desire to see that.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
So what
was the origin of Kleenex?
Got me.
Okay. It was a face cloth to remove face cream.
Oh.
That's how it started.
Facial tissue. That's why they call it
that. Facial tissue, right? Ah. And then the moms were like, oh, this is great. I don't have to go washing and ironing the handkerchiefs. I can just use this. And so Kleenex, once they found out how they were being used, did a huge campaign with a little golden book and a cartoon character called Little Lulu. If you remember,
Little Lulu.
And the handkerchief, the theme was don't carry a cold in your pocket.
Yes.
And they printed 2.5 million of these books in their first printing, and they spent millions of dollars, and it spelled the death knell of handkerchiefs.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, we talk, and you do it too, I'm noticing, Kleenex. We say the word Kleenex to denote facial tissue.
Right.
When that's a brand name. It's
right.
Not the thing name.
But don't you say Xerox for copy?
But that just shows how effective their...
Oh, they did a huge... They spent a fortune.
Yeah, we call it all Kleenex, yes.
Yeah, and it's really kind of sad. Yeah. So I will tell you,
We call it all Kleenex. We call it all Band-Aids.
Yes.
And we call it all Kotex.
Yeah, or aspirin. You don't say, get me a bear or get me a bear aspirin. It's aspirin, you know. So I will tell you, okay, people are going to go, okay, but there was a girl. I was at a friend's house, and her daughter, darling girl, college grad, smart, pretty, and we were talking about this article in the New York Times, and she said, well, how do you get a guy to ask you out? I mean, I'm astonished at this because it's so different. She's, how do you get a guy to ask you out? Because we all go out in groups, even to prom. They go in groups. Maybe the guy would bring you home. And I said, you know, she says, it doesn't happen. I said, then you have the party and you invite them. You have a martini party and they bring the vodka, they bring the gin, you have the vermouth, you have the hors d'oeuvres. If that's too much, if you have no budget, then it's brunch on Sunday and it's scrambled eggs and mimosas. They can bring the champagne. you have no money at all. It's spaghetti and salad.
Oh, yes. I said, spaghetti and salad.
Yeah. I said, and you can text them if you want, but they have to let you know 2 days ahead.
But wait a minute, you're talking about, I think,
she's having
two different things.
No.
How do you get a guy to ask you out?
She's having the party.
Yes.
2 days ahead. Okay, yes. There's this guy she's very interested in, whom we'll call Dave, because that's his name. And the first time she has the party, because she just invites the people that all go in the groups, he doesn't RSVP, he shows up.
Ugh.
So she says, okay, and she lets him in, and it's a spaghetti dinner, and they all have a great time, and they play charades. They have a great time. So a couple months later, she's having another dinner party, and she invites him again, and, you know, he doesn't RSVP, because who does? And he shows up, and she meets him at the door, and she says, I'm so sorry, but there's no room at the table. I wish you had let me know ahead. And he said, well, I'll just come in for a drink. He has a bottle. And she said, no, really, we're just sitting down to dinner another time. And she closed the door. And she said, I never felt so rude in my life.
Good for her,
because that's not how we treat people. And she said, and it was over. I knew I wouldn't hear from him again. Sure enough, she'd see him after work, playing soccer or at the bar or whatever, but that was it. 7 months later, he calls her and he says, my mom and dad are in town for dinner and I'd love to have you join us. And she says, what made you think of me? And he said, because you're the kind of girl I'd be proud to have meet my parents.
Oh my goodness, I'm going to cry.
I know, it makes me cry. Okay, so I had given her a handkerchief, a Valentine handkerchief with little red Valentines embroidered on it and a white bow. And I said, you carry this to remind you that you're worth it and there's somebody out there that will be the love of your life, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so he says, I'm going to the restaurant right after work. I can't pick you up. And I thought, okay, all right. He says, but I'll make sure you get safely home. So she goes to dinner with Dave and his parents. And for some reason, somehow, she opened her purse. And his mother saw this handkerchief because she says, I never use it, but I carry it, Ann. I tell Ann, I carry it. With these embroidered hearts on it. And the mother, Dave's mother, said, oh, how charming. And the mother pulls a handkerchief out of her purse. Okay, so this is a girl.
It's like semaphore signals.
Yes, yeah, so this is a girl, a quality girl in her mind that is deserving of her son. I'm not making this up. You can't make this stuff up. And Dave's sitting there with his jaw on the ground because he didn't know she had a handkerchief in her purse. And he's like, how did you do that deal with my mom? And she said, what are you talking about? He said, how did you know to carry a handkerchief? And she said, I always have that in my purse. I didn't do that because of your mom, right? So needless to say, she told her mom and said, you have to tell Ann what happened because, you know, I really thought when I didn't let him in for dinner because he didn't RSVP ahead, that was it. But he didn't forget that she set a higher standard.
Yes.
And, I know this sounds... God, I sound like somebody's great-grandmother, but you're only going to be treated the way you demand to be treated.
Well, by the way, that's not a great-grandmother thing. That's a very right-now thing in so many areas.
But
what happened that people stop? I mean, I find that when I make an invitation for dinner now, I say, let me know right away.
Yeah.
And a couple of... Because what happens is, it used to be, I found, that some people... would not RSVP, and, you know, I'd be in touch, and they wouldn't, and I'd assume that they just, and then they, that morning, say, well, we'll be there tonight.
Yeah.
And I find, and I've invited somebody else to, you know, make up my party, and so what I have said, now what I do, if I don't hear from somebody, I write back or call and say, you know, I haven't heard from you, but I've changed my plans about that date, and I will let you know for another one.
Good for you.
Well, you have to.
Well, I'll tell you what I did, which is...
Because how do you know how many places to set?
Well, you don't. You don't. But I started doing murder mystery dinner parties.
Oh.
And they have six to eight characters, and you can have other people that come that aren't characters. And so I let them know, you've been invited to a murder mystery dinner party, and you are going to play one of the characters. So if you can't come,
right.
I need to know, you know, now. So because people, are waiting for a better offer.
I know, that's what you get. That's what you think, yes.
And so instead of just dinner at my house, if it's a murder mystery dinner party and they're going to play a role, then they RSVP yes. And the, some who are shy, well, what role am I going to play and what do I have to do? I said, well, you're going to have to come and find out. And if you want to come, great. And if you don't want to come, great. But they know that it's going to be not an event, but it's going to be fun. And so they RSVP.
But people don't RSVP for weddings anymore.
I know.
Well, many people don't.
Even with the self-addressed stamped envelope in there? Oh, that's ridiculous.
They don't. Because maybe they're waiting for something better. The truth is, you don't know what you're going to feel like doing in 6 weeks. But the art used to be you made a commitment and you did it.
Well, the first time I got an email thank you for a wedding gift, I knew the world had changed. And I know I see these things in Ann Landers where they write in and go, it's been 2 years and I haven't written my thank you notes for my wedding gift yet. What should I do? And she's like, you write them. They bought you a gift, you write them. You know, come on.
And you start that letter with, as long as we're on the subject of letters, which is one of my favorite.
Yeah.
You start that letter that's 2 years late with, I am so sorry that I have been so negligent. I hope there is no statute of limitations on thank you. Something to indicate that you're a conscious human being.
Nice. Yeah. So to answer your question,
yes,
when
please.
She said, how do you get guys to ask you out?
Yes.
That was not... The answer was you throw the dinner, you throw the brunch, you do the inviting, and then you set the standards. And they all have a good time. Any guy is happy to bring a bottle of vodka or gin to your martini party and have the hors d'oeuvres and the whole bit. So if that's how you, if that's how you have to do it to start off, that's how you have to do it. And she said, but how do you close the door in their face?
That is a nice point you're making because you're showing that you are a giving, gracious human being. So the signal is who you are when you invite people to your home.
Well, we hope so. But they would associate a good time with your home. But Dave told her later, much later, that, and he's a very good-looking guy. I won't get into his profession. Some people, oh, that's me. I'm listening to your show. But he told her nobody ever, and mm-hmm. she very politely closed the door. He said, no woman ever closed the door in my face.
Yes.
And it's like, I'm sorry, the table's full. And he didn't. And he wrote her out. He said, at first, I wrote you off. And I thought, well, the heck with you. Who do you think you are? And then when he started thinking of, who am I going to take to dinner when my parents come?
Right.
That it was her. Because she's not a snob at all. And she was very, very nice about it. And she was brokenhearted to do it. But it's like, if that's all. Another girl in the article... whose father is a famous movie producer, said a guy used to take her to, they'd go to a hotel and then he'd take her to a hotel room and in her words, Lewis and Clark her and then stick her father with it was mentioned in the article, so I can say it's David Mamet. It was his daughter. Stick the father with the hotel bill. And I said, honey, if he's going to explore your, uncharted territory, then he can pay for the trip. I mean, that's ridiculous. But why they put up with it, I have no idea. Because they think...
Well, I think women do put up with things that they really don't want to because they're afraid of being left. Because these guys will find somebody else who does put up with it.
Most women will put up with it. But what's happening, and in this article, these kids are very, very lonely.
Sure.
I mean, when you're getting invited out at 10:30 on a Friday night with... And here's how they read. Sup? Like, what's up?
Oh,
hey?
Oh.
That's it. They get a hey or sup. And they're just supposed to go show up. I said, that's a booty call.
I was going to say, it's not even an elegant booty call.
It's not even, that's a booty call. Why would you bother?
A lovely booty call, by the way, I just want to go on record as saying, can be nice.
Yeah,
if you're in the mood for it.
Well.
But, sup?
Sup?
That's
hey?
Not even
yeah. So I said, how did you make sure when you had, she had a Sunday brunch. It was a Sunday brunch first that Dave came to. Then it was a spaghetti dinner that she said, the table's full. So for the Sunday brunch, I said, and how do you make... She said, how do I make sure that they even show up? And I said, well, you give them a job. This one goes and picks up the rolls. This one brings the orange juice.
Make
this
them
one
feel
does.
Part of it.
They have to... Yeah, exactly. This one gives so-and-so a ride. this one gives so-and-so. Oh, okay. And that was because they weren't RSVPing.
Right.
So she would call them and give them something to do. And
but you know, like, you make, I like the spaghetti dinner point, which is what I'm going to say maybe a little off the track. But I know somebody, young woman, she's not even so young anymore, she's been complaining all the time that I don't have any friends. And I said, why don't you? Nobody ever asks me any place. I said, why don't you do the asking?
Yeah.
Well, I can't afford to have a dinner party. I said, spaghetti. Just spaghetti and a green salad. And that's all you need.
And everybody wants to come.
A bouquet of daisies on your table.
Right.
You can afford that.
Right.
And, you know, you be the one to be giving. And you'll set yourself up in that milieu of people who, well, anyway, she never did it. But, yes, it's so easy to do.
And everybody else is out there waiting like she is. You know, or and if they're not sure, and say, bring a story of your most unusual dinner party you've been to, or the biggest dinner disaster you've ever been to, or whatever. So they know they're
theme kind of. I like that.
They know they're going to come hear good stories, or they'll come with a story.
And they're going to have something assigned to say. So if they're shy,
yeah,
that'll take care of that.
And
that's wonderful.
And if it isn't your story, we'll take your Uncle Tom's story, your Aunt Ruthie's story.
Oh, I like that.
About the worst Christmas dinner you ever had or whatever. And they're like, well, I'm going to go just to hear everybody else's story.
Sure.
So, and it's just, it's not that hard. And if you, and she wound up with Dave. What can I tell you?
That's wonderful.
What
okay.
can I tell you?
So Dave was a fine person.
He was.
Ultimately.
Yes. And
it hadn't been evoked.
Right. And the reason she let him in the first time was to see, well, this is going to come out wrong, and I don't mean it this way, but what a lovely home she has. She has an apartment in San Francisco. What a great hostess she is. What
it's
a nice entertainer.
It's a way to introduce her qualities to somebody. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Oh,
so
on the theme of love letters, I'm going to take a different, because usually I would ask who gets your love letter today, or some conversation about love letters. But I'm thinking, what a wonderful thank you note to buy a handkerchief.
Yes.
And include it in an envelope.
Well, they come in gift cards, and you can get great ones on Etsy.
Yes.
You can get okay ones on eBay, but you get lovely ones on Etsy for not very much money at all. And believe me, you're going to be remembered.
Yes.
And they're Valentine ones, Christmas ones, St. Patrick's Day, Mother's Day, birthday. What happened when... after World War II, when fashion became a big deal again, Dior, Balmain, Madame Rochat, they all put handkerchiefs on the runway. It became a big fashion thing. And so,
worn in the bracelet or in the belt.
Exactly. And so then when the car became a big deal, you won't believe this. All of a sudden, people are traveling. So what do you get? Florida, tons of handkerchiefs about Florida, tons of handkerchiefs about history and the Liberty Bell and Philadelphia, because this is where families, they now have a car, and now they can travel.
So you're saying there was a time when you'd get handkerchiefs, because now you get fridge magnets.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. And then California, tons of handkerchiefs on California. I have two whole blogs just on Hollywood and Hollywood handkerchiefs. Then I have another whole blog just on California. New York, World's Fairs. I mean, they're wonderful, wonderful handkerchiefs for traveling all around the country. Then there are even handkerchiefs. I can't believe this. The New Jersey Turnpike, the Pennsylvania Turnpike. It was a big deal to take a car and go on a toll road and go on a turnpike. I mean, it's showing you history. And then, of course, rock and roll. I have another whole blog that's just on that whole era of rock and roll and jitterbugging. And all the girls would tie a handkerchief around their ponytail.
Yes.
And we have tons.
We are a communicating species.
Yes.
And we need to. We need to be connected, which is why letters is so wonderful. Expressing your affection or any positive thought. If you have a positive thought, write it down, stick it in the mail, and make somebody else's life. We need to communicate.
You know,
and
that,
so handkerchiefs.
That reminds me of a story that Jack Canfield told, and he used to call them mini love letters. He used to take little post-it notes, and he'd put them in his daughter's lunch. It might just be, you look great in that red sweater.
Yes.
I'm so proud of your A on your math test, whatever. Never heard a word from her, never got a response from her, but he kept doing it. Then one day he couldn't find his hammer. and she had been nailing up some pictures or something in her room, and he's like, he says, I'm in a white hot heat, I'm looking for this hammer, and so I go in her room, and sure enough, there it is. And then he said, behind the door was every single posted on the door was every single post-it note he had put in her lunch, and he didn't realize dozens and dozens. She saved everyone.
That's right. People save everyone, and it is your history in your own handwriting.
Yes.
And by the way, okay, just handwriting for a second. Why don't you mention a couple of your books, because handwriting is one of the most interesting subjects of all, I think. And Anne, as a handwriting analyst, has some very interesting things to say.
Yeah,
so do you want to just say a book title and then give us your website for your blog?
Well, the blog is handkerchiefheroes.com, or you could also go to theaccidentalcollector.com, because some people can't spell handkerchief or some people can't spell heroes, and that's okay. You can go to the Accidental Collector. And I'm doing a whole series on just people who collect different things, because it's amazing what we're throwing out.
Well, it's also amazing what you get a passion for. I collect fountain pens.
Yeah.
Oh, the beauty of those things.
Yeah.
Always have.
Yeah.
Except now there's a ballpoint pen I love called Tool, T-U-L. They're fabulous. But go
ahead. Let me. You and I could sit and talk all day long.
What grabs but you about collectors?
Well, but I want to mention Tool for a minute, and I don't know anything about Tool, but I just did a presentation on forgery and fraud because I testify in court as an expert witness, and I'm making another presentation in 2 weeks, and I tell people, when you're signing your will, when you're signing your trust, do it in ballpoint pen because it's an oil-based ink. I've seen too many things that are bleached, that are eradicated, that are changed. Don't use felt tip or gel pens, which that disappears and dries up after a while. You have a favorite ballpoint pen, use that and sign every page, because what I'm seeing now is a lot of slip sheeting, so that the attorney might be the executor, and he's smart enough to know, don't try to forge that signature. So it'll be an original signature, but maybe page 2 in the will is changed. And it says, and I leave my vacation home in Tahoe to my faithful executor. And the family's going, what?
Oh, wow.
And the attorney will say to me, but that's her genuine signature. And I was in court on this. I said, yes, Your Honor, that's her signature, but it's not a genuine document. It's been altered. So sign and date every page.
Good
and
advice.
Even though you don't have to sign your trust, sign and date every page of your trust, because you're gone. Mm-hmm. And I'm in situations where the wife brings in the will, the girlfriend brings in a will, and the son brings in a will.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want it to be my decision who gets that money,
mm-hmm.
but that's what happens.
You know, when you're talking about what to use while we're on the subject, because my feeling is always that a love letter you write, or any letter you write, it's signed and dated.
Yes.
It has the force of a contract. It's signed and dated.
Interesting.
And you want to make sure that it stays that way, and you don't want to use ink that will, those cards that are kind of slick.
Yeah, oh yeah, no.
Ink
coated,
will stay on those.
Yeah,
coated.
No
they
coated stock,
stay.
No.
So anything that you want to stay,
uh-huh.
I wrote a letter to my granddaughter before she was born. Open it when she could read, and so she opened it recently. I think she was like maybe 6 when she opened it or something, and there was nothing on it.
Oh,
it had faded.
Yes,
it's like my first lesson to people. I
ignored.
There was nothing on it.
Yes.
So also indelible ink on good paper.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, ballpoint is an oil based ink.
Yes. Okay.
So, but yeah, you're right about the coated stock.
Ugh.
Also, when you as another point to that. With my World War I and World War II handkerchiefs, when a lot of times if you sent a love letter to a soldier, he was gone from that area. They couldn't tell you where they were going. That letter might follow him around the Pacific
before
he would ever get it.
Yeah.
Or if he got it and he's in a foxhole and he's opening it in the rain, and they'll read it every day. They may read it three times a day. Pretty soon it's disintegrated.
Yes.
So they would take handkerchiefs with their girlfriend or their wife's perfume, and they would carry them over their heart.
Yes.
And that they could pull out every day and sniff the perfume or whatever. And I have handkerchiefs that have love letters written on the handkerchief.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Because that's not going to,
disintegrate.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So there are love letter handkerchiefs from World War I and World War
II.
Now, World War I, they're in silk. Why were they not in silk during World War II?
Because we weren't friendly with the Japanese who made
silk. Because we were making parachutes.
Oh.
And we had to save our silk for parachutes.
Yes, okay.
The only exception are the aviators wore large handkerchiefs. They called them handkerchiefs. You might call them scarves that were printed with escape route maps. Mm. So if a airman was going to be dropped behind enemy lines in this section of Germany, where he would have a map on the scarf tied around his neck so he could follow the roads, he could follow the rivers, he could get out. These are, I'm goosebumps, these are amazing handkerchiefs. And in 1989, I was in London, and Harvey Nichols had an exhibit, and they hung the handkerchiefs from guy wires in the ceiling, so they almost look like parachuting airmen, and they lit them from behind. And you could see all of these escape maps. Now, they also did this for the Navy, and the fabric has been coated, some with pectin and some other, they've been made out of nylon, and they're tide tables and they're handkerchiefs, but they can survive the salt water. So handkerchiefs were used.
Communication and survival.
Absolutely.
Not just hankies.
Absolutely, and you can still find those maps from Burma, from Japan, from on eBay. They're not cheap. But there are, and I have survival maps with tide tables.
Oh,
so handkerchiefs have a huge history, and they saved a lot of lives.
My goodness. Oh, thank you so much for doing this with me.
Oh.
Gosh.
Happy.
I love listening to you. And there's no end to what you can offer. I know that there's more. Maybe you'll come back and do another topic.
And flutter my hanky.
Yes. Oh, thank you, dear. Well, until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye. And thank you, Anne Mahoney. So go to her blogs.
Yeah.
Have a good time. Okay. Thank you, dear. Bye.